So now let me make sure I've joined the audio conference correctly here. It says Pat. All right. I think we're up and running.
Better late than never.
Exactly. Cool. All right. Class begins at 1 o'clock. All right. These things happen. So today we're actually talking about time management, ironically enough, for aviation marketing professionals. And this actually is a huge topic. Every single client that we have ever had, this often becomes the biggest issue that we have. We may have a really great idea of what's going on and how things are working and what we need to do. But if we can't find the time to get it all done, then it's not going to be successful. So time management is huge for us. And even though it may seem kind of tangentially relevant to marketing, it really is. So we'll be talking about how to save time and how to make things work. John, I guess that's been your experience as well in the marketing that we've done with clients.
Oh, yes. Nobody's got enough time. Well, they do.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't know how to manage it.
Right, exactly. Well, everybody has exactly the same amount of time, but one thing that I think that's happened in the aviation industry in particular is that everybody is wearing so dang many hats. You know, a lot of times people that we work with have situations where they are not only doing marketing, but they're also doing operations, they're also the office manager, they're also this, they're also that, they're wearing 20 hats. John, you want to tell the story about a friend of ours who's got roped into doing marketing in addition to the other things that he was doing?
Oh, good grief. without naming names, this gentleman was working for an aviation company and doing the marketing, the research, and sweeping the floors and the hangar and cleaning airplanes, and they had him doing everything, and they were upset because he wasn't as effective at his marketing as he should have been.
Exactly. So in that case, it wasn't really a matter of doing marketing better. It was a matter of talking with his superiors and, you know, readjusting their expectations. Because, you know, it just isn't possible to build relationships with people, to plan events, to do all of the things that you need to do in marketing without spending sufficient time and having a lot of other tasks on your plate, you know, and marketing being the bottom of the ladder in a lot of cases, especially if you're looking at an operations versus marketing situation. Operations, you got people screaming at you, things have to be done right now. The marketing will never get done, because it is not as loud. You know, it's not a fire today. A lot of times you don't even think about marketing till the end of the year and you look at your sales numbers and you go, wow, that was really dismal. Well, it was because we weren't being proactive, and it was because, you know, marketing got pushed to the bottom of the list. So, you know, there is no easy button. Marketing takes time, and there is just no alternative for that. If anybody comes up with an alternative for that, we'd love to talk to them. We specialize in actually marketing automation, among other things, which does reduce the amount of time that you have to spend once you get things set up correctly. But, you know, there is an investment of time on the front end, and without doing that, you end up in a mess. So, and that's the other thing is there will never be a time in your life when you have as much time as you want. You know, a lot of people think, well, if I just get through this, or if I hire a person, or if I do this, or I do that, then everything will all be smooth and fabulous and everything else. And that's why we're using this diagram. This is what people think success looks like. This is what it really looks like.
Exactly.
So, you know, there will always be less of demands on your time. You'll always have, you know, parents get sick. You're going to have airplanes break. You're going to have things happen. And you just have to work with it. So let's get into it. The course that we're doing today is actually structured based on a book that I really love. I used to work for Franklin Covey. You may know that if you've been taking a lot of our classes, you probably have noticed some common themes there. It's hard to improve on somebody who's got the topic mastered, and you know, Franklin Covey really are some of the best in the business in time management, and we do highly recommend their workshops and other kinds of things. But so we're basically organizing this based on the 7 habits of highly effective people, but we're going to be basing it on the 7 habits of highly effective aviation executives who have to do sales and marketing. Habit 1 in the book is be proactive. And Stephen Covey uses the example of putting the big rocks in first. So, you know, you've got 2 jars here which have an equal amount of rocks and big rocks, little rocks, sand, and so on. And in the jar on the left, you may have seen this before. They use it a lot in time management classes and other things. The jar on the left, they put the sand in first and then the little rocks and then the big rocks. In the jar on the right, it's the same amount of stuff, but they put the big rocks in first. And then you can see that the smaller rocks kind of fit in the nooks and crannies, and then you pour the sand in and you shake it, and you can get a lot more in. And that's really what we have to do with our day or our week or our month or our year, is to plan those big things first. So, you know, you get out your yearly calendar, you put in those trade shows, you put in those vacations, you put in those, you know, big marketing events. You know, if you have a seasonal situation, you put those things in. And then you work around them with the smaller things. And, you know, you can get a lot more into your day, week, month, year if you do it that way. So we'll get into more details of how exactly we do that. But that's really the basic concept. If you can do this, you can actually do what looks like double your time. The other thing you have to do is once you have those big blocks of time in, you have to defend them. So let's say you put in a trade show. NBAA is coming up in October, and you know you're going to be planning a promotion for that. There are things you should be doing this week if you are going to NBAA in October. And it's so easy to just let those things slide to next week and next week and next week. You know, John and I have done a number of these trade shows, and we've actually done 1 in 60 days, and we'll never do that again. Remember that one, John? It basically ruined our lives for 60 days. And, you know, it was basically we did nothing but that. We highly do not recommend doing that. You can be so much more effective if you plan in advance and start doing some tasks starting now or starting even a month ago for NBAA or even a year ago for NBAA. But, you know, some of those big tasks you really can't start too soon. So with your calendar, you know, some of the things you want to do, if you even break it down to today, you can plan tomorrow before you leave today. And let's say you're working on NBAA, you're working on a big show, and you've got a task on your calendar to meet with folks and do some stuff and, you know, make sure that happens. You're going to want to confirm those appointments before you leave today. And this is one big thing that has made a big difference to us. We actually have some software that confirms appointments for us. But, you know, those are things that you can do to make things go 1,000 times better. And those missed meetings just kill us. And so you want to confirm your appointments, and then you want to set 3 tasks for yourself. We call it 3 on fire. And those are 3 things that absolutely positively have to be done. They're on fire, you know, whether they physically, visibly are or not. You have to use that psychological trick to say there's only 3 things that absolutely have to get done tomorrow. Here's what they are. If we get through those, I try to get them done by noon. If we get through those, then we can work on the other things that are on our plate. But if you can plan tonight before you leave, confirm your appointments for tomorrow and figure out what your 3 tasks that are on fire are, and plan to get those done before noon if you possibly can. Another way to use your calendar is your editorial calendar. And this is actually an editorial calendar for a airport business magazine or airport magazine. And you can see that, you know, they have the whole year planned out. And this is a bi-monthly magazine. So you can see they've got their cover story, their features, their distribution. If you are in marketing, you need an editorial calendar too. You need to have a topic of the month. You need to have, you know, here's what our sales incentives are. Here's what our marketing efforts are going to be centered around during June, July, August, and so on. And, you know, you need to be working toward those kind of themes. And if you've got this on the calendar as your big rock, then the smaller rocks fall into place because you've got your themes. You know, in October you've got MBAA plans, so you can plan around that and plan the small rocks into that. And then you're never going to be looking at a blank piece of paper going, gee, what am I going to write about? You know, because you've got your topics all planned out. Here's a tool that we just recently started using. This is actually an Infusionsoft. It's called My Day. And it's got tasks and a calendar. It doesn't matter what you use, as long as you pick a tool and you use it. And as long as your whole team, hopefully, is using the same tool or a compatible tool. We've used Google Calendar in the past, and it's just as good. You know, maybe not in as much detail about particular things, but whatever tool you're using, make sure you learn it. You know, learn all the ins and outs of how it works. Learn some of the features of it. Learn some of the things that it can automate for you, and so on. So whatever you do, just pick a tool and use it. Okay. And then the next thing is to have and use a mission statement. Most of us have a mission statement that's hanging on the wall somewhere. We haven't seen it in 6 months, you know, except when we dust it, when we have some big wigs coming through for a tour. That's the only time we notice a mission statement. But, you know, you think to yourself, you know, why am I doing this? And some of the things that you're doing, you may find that you really don't need to be doing, or that you can delegate. Maybe it's not as important as you thought it was. You know, if our mission is to help our clients sell more stuff using marketing processes, then, you know, we need to be thinking about, is what I'm doing actually helping a client sell more products? Or am I just, you know, polishing the hubcaps here, you know? And if I'm polishing the hubcaps, do they really need to be polished? So, you know, think about that. This is actually a blueprint for a Batmobile. So, you know, what you want to do, and we actually have a drawing that is just about this complicated on our wall that's kind of our big picture of our marketing program, you know, where different clients are in that process, what they need to be doing, what we need to be doing for them, and so on. And that's on a big wall. And John's got a big whiteboard in his office that has this on it. So what this does is it lets us, every time we walk by that, we think about it. And we think, you know, here's something we need to add. Or, you know what, this isn't going to work without this thing connected to that thing. So, you know, when you have a spare moment, and sometimes, this happens to me. I don't know if it happens to you, John. We're so busy, and then we get an hour, and we go, oh, my gosh, where do I start? You know, you have a meeting canceled or whatever. You get an hour that falls into your lap, and you're going, oh, my gosh, I don't even know what to do. I think I'll start Facebook for an hour because I just don't know what to do with myself. But if you have that big picture on the wall and a spare hour or two falls into your lap, you have something where you can go see, here's where I left off. Here's some things that need to be done. Here's what's important. And, you know, having those visual things really help us a lot. Can you tell us about your wall, John? I don't know if you can turn the camera if you want to, if you've got anything on there that...
No, I've got too many different projects on there that some of which are client confidential. But
right.
That thing morphs daily from one thing mm-hmm. to another, and you can always find something to do on it.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, if you've got a wall, you know, use the space. All right. And here's another way to begin with the end in mind. When you do a piece of work, think about how can I use this in addition to the way that I'm using it right now. We write a blog post every Monday, and that takes us an hour or two. And so it's a significant investment of work. How can we leverage that piece of work and get the most value out of that couple of hours that we spend doing that? So here we write the blog post, and of course we publish it on our blog. And this is actually a pretty standard blog post that's got, you know, about 800 words and a nice infographic and things. So it's a pretty substantial piece of work, and it represents an investment to us doing this amount of work. So what we do is we take the whole thing and we put it in our printed newsletter, which goes out every other month to our customers and prospective customers. So some folks that aren't going to see it on our blog will see it in our printed newsletter. Another thing that we can do is we can take this piece out, infographic and some of the verbiage, and we put it into a Facebook post. We reuse it yet again. And then we take the same post, we take little bits of content like this statement right here, and we post it on Twitter with the link. We can use the heck out of this 2 hours of work, and by spending another 15 minutes on top of the 2 hours we've already spent to write this article, we can get four times as much mileage out of it. And these tweets, we can actually put in some software that will schedule those so that they'll be scheduled out over time, so we don't put 20 tweets from the same article out at the same time. We schedule those out over a couple of weeks. So you can see that we don't waste anything in terms of effort. It's hard enough to get those things written. And those of you who are clients that are on the phone, I know you struggle to get those articles written. But if you think about how much mileage you can get out of those, it makes it easier to sit down and spend that 2 hours if you know that it's getting you a lot more mileage than it would be otherwise. So in the process of that, you think, does this activity that I'm spending time on right now make money? Right? That's the question that it comes down to in sales and marketing. When we posted that article that we just showed you on Facebook or on Twitter, is that going to make us money? How do we know that? There's a couple of ways that we can find out. One is we ask people when they call us or when they write to us and, you know, ask us about our services, we ask them, how did you find it? In some cases, they will tell us, we found you on Facebook or we found you on Twitter. Or sometimes they'll reply to a tweet, you know, saying, tell me more or send me your rate for this or, you know, whatever the situation is. So we know where that came from. Sometimes we don't know where that came from. And John, I know there's been situations with you where there are probably companies that you're doing business with that you don't know how you found them originally.
Well, that's for sure.
But sometimes when you ask people, you don't know. So a more accurate way is to look at your Google Analytics and look at the traffic sources and, you know, look at how much traffic did I get from Twitter. And if you're getting a decent amount from Twitter, then, you know, that's probably worth it. If you're using something like Infusionsoft, then you can actually track, I could track if John came to our Twitter feed and saw, clicked on a link there and then came to our website and then became a client, I've got that all tracked in my CRM. And some CRMs are sophisticated enough that they can do that. But then we have people like John who messes up the whole thing. Tell us how you do that.
Well, I've got my email set up. I probably shouldn't say this, but I've got my email set
Go
up.
Go ahead. We're all friends here.
So that I don't have to click on an email message to read it.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, as far as any of the marketing firms know, I have not opened it.
Right.
Therefore, I read it and then I delete it. And all they know is I deleted it, having never read it.
Actually, we won't even know that you deleted it. We won't know that you ever received it.
True.
But another thing that you do that drives us crazy is that you have secure browsing that you use sometimes so that we can't tell if you found us through Facebook or Twitter or some other means.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's... Mm-hmm. That's for a different client, yes.
Right. So, it's not perfect, and there are people who are going to slip through, and you're just going to have to ask them, how did you find us? And even if you ask them, they may not know. But you have to make every possible effort to find out where your customers are coming from, and those are the things that you spend the most time on.
Let me just say...
Mm-hmm.
The people I'm currently doing business with now for a project for my company, nobody has asked me how I found them.
Mm.
Nobody. And they're not anywhere where you can easily find them on the web.
great.
But they're multi-million dollar corporations. Interesting.
That is just fabulous. You know, and see, that drives me crazy. That is such a waste of everything, because it's, you know, when you are doing work, you want to reuse that as much as possible. And when you are doing work, you want to analyze, you know, does this make sense? Should I be doing more of this or should I be doing less of this? So, you know, everything that you do, you look at, and we know most of our customers come from our printed newsletter. The second biggest draw is our blog, and the third is LinkedIn. So those are the top three. And if we're not going to get something done this week, those three things are not going to be compromised. You know, we may compromise Twitter, we may compromise Facebook. You know, if it's a busy week, I might ignore the Twitter feed for 2 weeks at a time. And I shouldn't do that. But for our own company, it's kind of the cobbler's shoes kind of a scenario where I know that is not our biggest draw. So I have to concentrate my time on first our clients, second our own marketing. And when I concentrate on our own marketing, I concentrate on the big three, the ones that make us the most money. All right. So where do you spend the money, or where do you spend the time in your marketing system? Phase one, getting new clients. Phase two, credibility and sales activities. Or phase three, post-sales activities. What do you think, John?
Split it. Depending on where you are, depending on what your goals are, actually. I mean, if you're new and or you're trying to get market share, then you put more in phase one.
True. Yeah, if you have no clients, obviously, you work on phase one because you've got nobody to work on in the rest of your system. But if all other things being equal, your best return on investment is going to come in phase three. You got to take care of the customers you've already got before you can advertise for new ones, or before it makes sense to advertise for new ones. So you want to spend your time and money where you're going to get the best return on investment, and that's going to be phase three. So yeah, all things being equal, hit the bottom and make sure that's being covered really well. And then, you know, work your way up. When we're working with a startup, we do that backwards. We start with phase one and then go to phase two and phase three. And I think most marketing companies do that. They want to bring new customers in the door first and then work on the rest of it. But really, your best ROI comes from the bottom up. All right. And then habit four in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People is think win-win. And when you're looking at this with your staff, your customers, with everybody else, first of all, too many of us, myself included, try and do everything ourselves. And it's taken me a long time to pry my fingers off of some of the tasks that I do because I'm so particular about, you know, some of the quality of things that go out and, you know, printed materials, everything. I need to see every single piece because I know there's going to be one with a big black stripe down the middle if I don't look at every piece in a box that comes back from the printer. And some of that stuff is kind of OCD, I guess you could say. But you know, you have to look at what can I delegate. You know, your company cannot grow unless you look at this from a broader perspective and you think, you know, who would want to help me with this project and what can I do for them or what would they get out of it? And in some cases, some of these co-marketing agreements with other companies can be really, really profitable. And you can use someone else's email list. You can use someone else's newsletter. They could use your newsletter, you know, and share the cost of that. There's lots of ways that you can think win-win and split both the time and money among two or more companies or among two or more people and think about that. So you can really leverage your time a lot more, and you really have to think past that.
Sometimes two or more divisions within a company can do the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't think we have any on the phone today, but there are some companies that split sales and marketing into two departments. And in some cases, they get into a territorial kind of a situation where they're actually wasting resources or duplicating tasks that they don't both need to be doing. So, you know, you really want to work together as much as you can.
And just so everybody understands where sales falls with respect to marketing.
I think they should be in the same department, and I think sales should report to marketing. If I were starting a company today of any size, sales is part of marketing. A lot of the textbooks will draw that a different way. But ultimately, what it comes down to, marketing is responsible for the number of sales you make. And marketing also drives into customer service and product development and all kinds of things. So it really has to be running the show, and it really has to be a C-level person in the company.
Marketing will provide the leads to sales.
Yep, absolutely. And they
Therefore,
better be working together pretty well.
sales is a subset of marketing.
Agreed. Okay, so yeah, you think about, who can I partner with? How can I get help without hiring an employee? And this is a big deal the last few months. And a lot of our clients are coming to us with this scenario. They're like, okay, we're expanding, here we are, but we really need to get more marketing done, but we cannot possibly bring on another employee. And Sean, you probably have run into this as much as more than I have because you work with the organizational structures more than I do.
Yes, and in fact, I'm helping a client now do a startup on a multi-million-dollar firm, but we're going to have to hire employees. But in our case, we're being very, very, very selective before the entity is formed and talking to people so that we can actually discriminate like you used to be able to do in the hiring process, which you can't do anymore. We're doing it in advance. Now, once the entity's formed, we know who to go interview. Okay. But the problem is you cannot find people that are willing to work not just hard, but smart for the amount of money that a corporation is able to pay. And what's happening is that with Obamacare and some other government regulations are happening. It's just almost impossible to hire somebody properly and get them on board. And then even if you do, it's getting almost impossible to be able to let them go for cause, even documented for cause. So you've got to be very, very careful. And a lot of companies just don't want to go through that. So they'll contract the people.
Right, exactly, and we're doing the same thing in
Yes,
terms
we are.
of contracting with folks. And in a lot of cases, for sales and marketing, this makes a lot of sense because you're going to have fluctuations, seasonal fluctuations. You're also going to have scenarios where you've got a couple of trade shows a year, whatever the situation is. You don't necessarily need a staff all year round, but you definitely need assistance with those items. And so sales and marketing people who can work with you when and as needed can be very, very cost effective. Other ways of doing this, and this is really what boils down to the scenario that we talked about at the very beginning with this friend of ours who's taking out the garbage with one hand and he's got his iPad in his other hand scheduling meetings. It is there's a point at which it becomes impossible. There is a certain number of bodies that you need to get the job done, especially in sales and marketing, because you absolutely have to have a professional person building relationships with people in the industry. And you can't shortcut that. You can't make that be a robot. You can automate a lot of things like email and task automation so that you can do your lead sourcing and figure out, which of these leads should I spend time and money on and so on. But at some point it comes down to, I got to get somebody in this person's office making a sales presentation, or I have to make a call personally and there's no way around it. And those are the kinds of things where, you really want to get some help. So, you want to get professional people who know aviation, and you want to get folks that you trust with your scenario. So being able to delegate is really, really important. I think I am not muted now. Okay.
And what'd you do? Mute yourself?
I have no idea. There's another thing. Yeah, learn how to use your tools. Exactly. So, basically, you want to prioritize. Priority one is always interactions with customers. You cannot shortchange those. You cannot, in some cases, you can go from 4 meetings a year with a client to 1 meeting a year and 3 teleconferences, something along those lines. But you really can't cut much more than that. You really have to get in the same room with people to a certain extent, especially in those high-trust items in the large-ticket items. So you can economize to a certain extent, but priority one is always interactions with customers. Everything else, you can automate, you can delegate, you can do other things, but that definitely is priority one. One thing that I have done that I've noticed myself doing is, sometimes I will get so involved with marketing campaigns and other kinds of things because that's the part that I find fun, and that's the part that I enjoy. I don't particularly like picking up the phone and making sales calls, especially cold calls or anything along those lines. But those interactions with people are something that we absolutely cannot shortcut. And having worked with a sales coach for a little over a year, that's Mark Lieber, thank goodness for Mark if you're on the phone. But there really is no substitute for being face-to-face with customers or phone-to-phone with customers. And, so I was kind of practicing avoidant behavior by polishing campaigns and doing a lot of writing and things like that when I should be actually on the phone with customers. So notice that about yourself. What is it that you don't like to do? And if you're a particularly introverted person or have introverted tendencies like I sometimes do, it is really, really hard to get yourself out there and get in front of customers or pick up the phone. But, that's why I block those in as priority one tasks and make sure that those get done. And John has been a student of my avoidant behavior for a number of years and has noticed these things. Okay. So are you being fast but inefficient? And in some cases, we can be busy. We can be really, really busy and really legitimately busy in order to kind of shelter ourselves from some of those tasks that we don't want to do. So, are you hiding behind paperwork and other tasks when you really should be getting on the phone or getting on a plane or getting in front of customers and just saying, "I'm sorry, I just don't have time." But, really that's what needs to be done to make sales. Busy does not equal successful. You can do all the work in the world and still have no customers. Really successful equals having lots of happy customers and having lots of paperwork done.
Yep.
Do you have anything to add to that, John?
I think that said it all.
No snide comments there. Okay, and then the other thing is to seek first to understand, especially when we are being busy and especially when we are pressed for time. And I do this too, I tend to talk faster. And in relationships with people, slow is sometimes fast. Stephen Covey actually wrote an entire book called The Speed of Trust. If you start moving faster than the speed of trust, you're passing up opportunities because your clients are not with you or your prospective clients are not with you. You've left them 5 miles back in the dust because you're off talking about features and benefits and everything else, and they haven't figured out yet whether or not they trust what you're saying. So in some cases, slow equals fast, and in some cases, spending time on the golf course, spending time in a meeting, spending time talking about form. We've talked about that before, family, occupation, mission, recreation. Those are things that you need to spend the time to do. So, in a lot of cases, slowing down and spending time with customers is the thing to do. And most of the decision makers in the aviation industry are they're male, they are 45 to 65, they are college educated, they're in a demographic that grew up before things went to light speed. They're not used to tweeting and all this craziness that's going on in the world. and they are much more comfortable if you match speed with them. I think we've got some friends that do that very, very well at, you know, they organize dinners and other kinds of things at trade shows, and they do not talk business. They make it a practice not to do that, and it's really, really cool. And it's worked really well for them, I think. All right, habit six, synergize, get your customers to do some of the work. In a lot of cases, your customers are going to be just as motivated as you are and maybe are going to be just as happy if you get out of the way and let them do some of the work. And, you know, those kinds of things would be like referral systems. If you send out a referral package to your customers and say, you know, we'd really love a referral from you and we're offering you and them a gift or a bonus, they're happy to do that for you. Self-service information and training. If somebody is trying to do something with your product and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, they would just as soon be able to go to your website and be able to get to a YouTube video or something that shows them how to use it, rather than waiting until morning and calling you and spending an hour on the phone with you. So having those things available isn't necessarily a substitute, but in some cases, it may take some of that burden off the plate. Have a user conference. I know there's a Bonanza club that meets, you know, and they get together and they talk about all of the problems with Bonanzas and all the things they love about Bonanzas and all the things that you could do differently and all the ways that you can solve problems with maintenance and things like that. The company doesn't do this. The customers do. You know, they do a lot of the work. The company, I'm sure, if they're smart, we'll capitalize on that and, you know, take lots of videos and lots of interviews and, you know, do what they can to propagate that information and support that activity. But those are things that really, really make a difference. Have you been to a user conference, John, that you thought was particularly well done?
It's been a while, but yes, I have actually been to a couple.
What did they do that really made it worthwhile for you? And did you feel like the company was trying to get out of work, or do you think that was a service that they offered?
Oh, no. Well, remember when we went to San Diego, you went with me on that conference.
Yep, I did.
They went way out of their way to make sure everybody was having a good time, and a lot of information was transferred in different directions, not just from them, but they wanted information from the users.
Right. And that one was actually run by the company, not by a user group or a club or something like that. But, and that's the sort of thing that we'd love to see more of. And even if you can't do a physical user conference, you could have maybe a forum on your website. Or, you know, you can have the same effect with, you know, using social media and other kinds of things. You can ask people, what do you think of this? Or, you know, if somebody writes in with a problem, you may notice that somebody else answers the question before you get to it. And that's the sort of thing you really want to encourage and reward. Right. So, you know, synergizing with your customers and with partners and with other folks can sometimes take some of that burden off your plate. And in a lot of cases, they can do it better than you can anyway, especially in the case of referrals. You know, what other people say about you is a lot more credible than what you say about yourself. So, you know, we spend a lot of time doing working with referral programs and testimonials as well because of that fact. You know, we're doing a little bit of work. We're getting your customers to tell us what they like about your product or service, and then we're using that and repurposing it in all of those ways that we talked about in your marketing materials. Habit seven, sharpen the saw. This is my favorite, take time off. But seriously, you know, we actually, John and I, John has and some of you already know this, but John has an aircraft leasing company, and I have the marketing company. John owns 2% of my business. I own 2% of his business. And we sometimes have clients and other projects that intersect in different ways. But when we're in the office, we are busily doing things, and we're working on that big picture, and we're running 1,000 different directions. But when we go to a coffee shop down the street, something happened, and I'm not sure what that is. But all of a sudden, we get better ideas. You know, sometimes we can cut through, you know, hours and hours of work just by coming up with an idea, taking a step back and saying, you know, are we really doing this the right way, or is there an easier way to do this? And getting away from the office is some kind of a phenomenon. John, do you know any more about that, or do you want to say any more about that?
I don't know what it's called, but I can tell you that we go to the coffee shop not with the intent of discussing business, just to get away and take a break. And, you know, a couple of sips into iced tea or coffee, whatever time of the day it happens to be, and all of a sudden somebody will say, you know, what we ought to do with this is, or, and then we end up in an hour-long discussion and actually figure out two or three different things we come back and implement.
Exactly. I think part of it is just, you know, we have blinders on, you know, when we're in the office and we're cranking through getting things done. And so sometimes a difference in time and space will really actually in some cases save us days or weeks of work because we figure out a better way to get something done.
Absolutely. And at coffee shop, I think we probably ought to make a rental contract with them.
Yeah, exactly.
We figured out that it works, and we'll just go there with no particular intent other than coffee or tea. And 99 times out of 100, we get outstanding ideas and ways to implement things.
Right. And one last thing on that point. I think this is one of the things that just taking time off is one of the things that has gone by the wayside with the economy being what it is. You know, people don't take breaks. People just, you know, show up at work at 7:30 and they work till 7 at night and, you know, they are just plowing through things. They don't take breaks. They don't take vacations. They don't do any of those things. And I think that's actually kind of a loss. When I was working for some of the larger corporations, we actually used to do some what they used to call team building activities, you know, where we would go somewhere and spend time together not working. You know, in one case, we went to a cooking class, and this was an information technology company. And we all went to a cooking class, and we prepared a meal together, and we sat down and ate it. And, you know, it just really shifted gears and caused us to think differently. And, you know, as a team, we worked better after that. And it doesn't have to be something expensive, but I think, you know, that time off or that shift of perspective is something that we're missing a lot of, and, you know, we like to do that with clients whenever we can and spend time doing something other than working when it's possible to do that and appropriate. The second thing is spend time learning to use your tools. We talked about Google Calendar. We talked about Infusionsoft. We'll talk about a bunch more tools here coming up, but most people that buy Salesforce, as an example, as a CRM or ACT or Constant Contact or Infusionsoft or anything, don't use the whole tool. They only use about 10% of it. They use it to get done what they want to get done right now, which is send an email, but they don't really use all of what they're paying for. You know, so if you're paying $100 a month for something or $500 a month for something, then for heaven's sake, use the whole thing. You know, use all of the features that go with it, or at least learn what features go with it so that you can decide whether this is appropriate or not. You know, we just came back from an Infusionsoft conference, and we learned a lot of things that it does that we were spending money on other tools to do. So we were able to, immediately after that conference, save a couple $100 by getting rid of tools that we had duplicated in our toolbox.
Actually,
and some of those things, yeah.
Closer to $400 per month.
Yeah. And, you know, these conferences cost money, and, you know, it takes time to go through some of these tutorials and things like that. But if you have a tool that you're using extensively in your business, take the time to learn it and apply all the pieces of it. It also makes things a lot more streamlined, hopefully, if you're using one tool rather than replicating information into two or more. Google Calendar is one of our favorite things. And it actually integrates with a lot of the other tools that we use, Infusionsoft and so on. You can see my big rock in here, and I color my rock. so that they can see, you know, what our big wrecks are and what we're working with. And, you know, you'll want to block out time for the different things that you want to do. I always forward my phone during particular planning and prep time. You see, I've got some red time in here that is absolutely inviolable. And I don't take calls. I don't do anything with that. I'm just cranking through getting work done during that time. And, you know, if someone needs to get hold of me or whatever, they can wait an hour. They usually aren't marketing disasters. You know, so luckily we're in a profession where we can do that. And most of us are in that situation. You know, we're not going to be able to make that much of a difference between 1 hour and the next. If you get back to somebody in an hour, it's usually not going to cause problems. So that time blocking really, really helps me. Also, everyone on our team uses the Google Calendar, and we have access to each other's calendar, so we can see, you know, I can see when John's open, he can see when I'm open, and we can plan things accordingly. So it's also web-based, which is another thing that we like in our tools, because we can get to them when we're traveling. If we have a hardware situation, you know, my laptop is doing something else or whatever and is slowed down at the moment, I can use my iPad to get to this. Or, you know, if John's in an airport and he happens by a kiosk, he can get to a Google calendar. John, I know calendars are not your favorite thing, but do you have anything to add?
You're right. They're not my favorite. And no, I don't. I think it's disgusting. Okay. It's disgusting. You can't come up with one calendar that's going to work with everybody everywhere easily. And it just isn't that way yet.
Right. Technology being what it is, this is pretty good, but, you know, there are things that drive us crazy. Yeah. So, you know, the kinds of tools that you might want to use, Calendar, Google, Outlook, and Fusionsoft, you know, they're all different calendars that, you know, in some cases you can integrate them with each other. We recommend using at least integrating with your team and, you know, trying some things to make sure that you've got something that works for everyone. The worst thing in the world is having appointments missed because the calendar software screwed up. You know, that ruins your credibility with clients. It ruins your efficiency as a team. You know, it's just the worst. So, you know, we hate that. One thing that I came across that this year that really helped me a lot is appointment software that works with the calendar. And I've been using TimeTrade, and we're going to be moving to Appointment Core, which is actually part of the Infusionsoft system. So, you know, part of that effort to streamline and make things consistent among the team. But TimeTrade is fantastic because it lets customers or clients pick the time that they want from my calendar, and they can see when I'm open and when I'm not, and they can pick the time that they want, and it translates time zone for them and everything else, and it saves a lot of going back and forth. CRM, absolutely necessary for marketing, whether you use Infusionsoft, HiRise, ACT, Salesforce. I think Salesforce is a little big for a lot of the folks that are probably on the call. If you have multiple levels of commission, Salesforce can't beat it. But for the rest of us, one of these others works real well. And Infusionsoft is our choice, given our parameters. So TimeTrade, just to look in a little more detail, this is something on the web that people can click into, and they can select a time from my calendar. They can see, you know, what I have available, and they can pick a time that works for them. And this saves so much going back and forth and saying, you know, well, so-and-so is available at this time, well, so-and-so is not. You know, if you have a tool like this where you can see, you know, when they're available, when you're available, and just say, you know, pick a time that works for you, and go from there. That saved me a lot of headaches. It also does the confirmations and things. Marketing automation. We're really big on this for the pieces that we can automate. And we had talked earlier about the things that we cannot automate. There is no substitute for getting in the same room with someone and shaking their hand and, you know, building those trusted relationships one-on-one. But when things can be automated, they should be. And in this case, you know, you can see we've got things coming from Facebook, Twitter, a website, going to a form, going to an email confirmation request. They can confirm their email. It goes through a series of sequences of email that stop when a goal is reached, you know, when someone clicks the link or does something that we want them to do. So, you know, all of those things are based on web forms. They're based on tags. They're based on automation of what people do on the web. And that leads us to finding out who we need to be spending time with and who we need to be calling with a sales call and who we need to be making a sales presentation to, who we need to be sending an information package to. And that really helps us focus our time and money much better than otherwise. And once we get something like this set up, it runs until we change it. So, you know, we don't have to think about, did we send out those Monday morning emails? You know, or did we send an email to this person? You know, this is another thing that can be automated. Once someone has purchased a product, you can send them a series of emails that's like the tip of the week or something along those lines. You know they're not going to open the user guide. Nobody reads instructions anymore. But if you can do something like send them a tip of the week or send them a YouTube video that's here's how you set up your product, you know, those are things that can be automated. And you know when someone has purchased a product, you have a pretty good idea of what questions they're going to have. And if you can automate a series of communications with them, that just makes life a lot easier for them and for us. You only have to do it, set it up once. Okay, anything further on automation, John, before we go to the checklist?
No, I think that pretty well covered it. I mean, we could have a whole seminar on automation, but...
And we probably will, but for today's purposes, we'll leave it at that. But yeah, the checklist, you want to block out some time for planning. Planning should be one of your big rocks. If you do not have an editorial calendar, one of your big rocks, as soon as you can find a block of time, is to create an editorial calendar. You also want to prioritize your tasks and figure out, you know, what needs to be done first. So, you know, I have a planning block every Monday where I look at, here's what I've got, here's what I need to do. You know, here's our editorial calendar, here's what I'm going to do based on that, and so on. Plan tomorrow before you go home today. Confirm your appointments and your 3-on-fire. If you've got software that'll confirm your appointments for you, then great. If not, make a phone call before you leave, you know, just to make sure that those appointments are going to happen. That has been, I think, one of our biggest time vacuums. If I look back over the last year and all of the things that have gone on, is meetings that don't happen. You know, for one reason or another. And aviation is bizarre in this sense because things do happen. But if you can confirm the night before, I think that really cuts down on the number of appointments that get missed and things like that. And again, you're 3-on-fire. You don't want a big, long task list because, you know, you'll look at that and just roll your eyes and go off and do just be reactionary the next day. But if you have 3, that's a manageable number. And if you can get them done before noon, then you're a lot more productive. Create your editorial or marketing calendar. Put in those big rocks like MBAA and so on. Have a big picture, a blueprint, and have it visible. Hang it up on your wall where you walk by it all the time. Consider each task. You know, as you go through your day, think about what you're doing. You know, think about if you're putting things in Twitter. You know, could this be automated? Could this be outsourced? Or could you not do this? If you're not getting any traffic from Twitter, then for heaven's sake, you know, what are you doing? Why are you doing that if it's not bringing you any money? You know, if you're polishing hubcaps, then, you know, think about, and, you know, the order that you want to look at things is, you know, can you eliminate it? If you can't eliminate it, can you automate it? If you can't automate it, then you outsource it. And with outsourcing, we'd want to look at other options first as far as things like, you know, services that you can contract with, you know, people that you can partner with and other kinds of things before you think about hiring an employee. So you've got kind of from the least to the most expensive ways to manage those things.
And with respect to outsourcing, you do not have to be a large company to do that. There are many options where you can get extremely high quality, round the clock assistance on things at very reasonable prices.
That's absolutely true. And outsourcing doesn't necessarily mean overseas either.
That's correct.
I think a lot of people, that comes to mind, you know, if I'm not doing it myself, and if I'm outsourcing it, then am I sending it to Malaysia or India or something like that? You don't have to do that. There's lots of folks in the U.S. that have small companies that handle specific tasks like receptionists or virtual assistants and other kinds of things. So yeah, good point, John. Thank you. Consider if you're hiding from tasks out of fear. You know, there's always stuff that we'd rather not do. And so sometimes we will just get busy in order to avoid those kinds of things. And, you know, I always thought I was too smart for that. You know, I would never do that. That's ridiculous. But working with a sales coach over the last year or so, that's been pointed out to me, and he was absolutely right that, you know, a lot of times I will do things rather than make those sales calls or get on an airplane or, you know, do what I should be doing, which is getting in front of customers. Find good tools and use them. And when we mean use them for more than one thing. You know, don't just use Infusionsoft to send emails with. You know, use all of the tools that come with something that you're paying for anyway and that you have to learn anyway. You might as well learn all of it. And tools being calendars, CRM, appointment software, other kinds of things that can save you time. Okay, so if you're enrolled in the class and you need credit for your PDUs or CEUs, we'll be sending out packets with the homework for this class. And it will be something along the lines of show us your before and after schedule, before and after you took the class, a week schedule. So we'll also be sending you a survey. You want to fill that out and send it to us either fax or snail mail, and we'll send you a free gift with your next month's lesson. I can tell you right now that your free gift will be the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People if you don't already have that. If you do, just check the box and say, send me something else, and we'll send you something that you don't already have. All right, so coming up in July, content creation. We have a lot of clients that are doing their own content creation, which is great. But the question comes up every month, you know, what the heck do we write about? You know, that's an ongoing issue. So we'll talk about how to work content creation, including video and photos, into your routine so that you don't have to set aside time. You know, we used to, when we did content creation, we used to tear the house apart to put together a studio so that we could, you know, turn off the air conditioning, turn off the fridge, turn off everything so that we could have a sound system and everything. There are ways to set that up so that it's not so difficult to get good video and to get good photos and things like that and work that into your routine. Another thing is how to legally and ethically repurpose content from others. And there have been a lot of things in the news recently about copyright and fair use and other kinds of things. So we'll want to talk about that so we don't end up getting into issues where we're using images that are going to get us in trouble or anything else. Some of those things are actually kind of scary. So we'll talk about copyright trolls and other concerns. There are actually somebody actually tried to copyright the technology that does podcasts, saying that everybody who's doing a podcast is infringing on his copyright, and he didn't even invent the technology. This is just somebody that had the idea and happened to file the copyright. So, you know, there's lots of things going on that we need to be aware of as far as copyright and so on in marketing. Also, how to use ghostwriters and other helpers. Some of our clients are actually writing books or, you know, in the process of producing books and other large pieces of material. And, of course, they're busy folks that don't have time for that. So we'll talk about how ghostwriters and other helpers can help you produce content and get that done. All right, so we're just about on time, but we can take a couple of questions if anybody has any that you want to throw in the chat or if you want to unmute the lines, John. All right, I guess we did either really, really well, or everybody's just completely confused, or they all left.
No, they're all here.
Okay. All right, we're still live. All right. Well, you guys have a fantastic month, and we'll see you again next month. And if you have any questions, concerns, or comments, or anything like that, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or our blog. So we're happy to connect with you anywhere and everywhere, and we'll talk to you soon.
See you later. Bye.